Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We love a naming competition in this country. Yeah, whether it's an elephant or a hippopotamus or 37 kid goats. That's the latest one. 37 kid goats. We spoke to Melissa. You might remember Melissa got the job of being the goat herd. She was employed, is employed by the Old Irish Goat Society, and they've moved a goat herd onto Howth Head to take care of the grass and all that sort of thing. And she's employed by Fingal County Council, and there are 37 new additions to the herd. They're already hard at work, which is good to hear, grazing the land to prevent gorse fires as Ireland approaches the summer season, while keeping the area healthy and vibrant all year round. And Fingal, obviously, County Council supports all that. You, the public, have a chance to be part of Howth's rich history. The council is encouraging everyone to get creative with their name suggestions. They're looking for people to suggest a name that reflects their Irish roots and the work they do to keep Howth Head beautiful. That's what it says. And it could be using a name from Irish mythology, names with Irish language origins or something, which has Irish cultural significance. Now, 37 names. They must be kidding. They must be kidding. Right. OK, sorry about that. Once the judges have shortlisted the names, it says they will go out to a public vote. The lucky winner will then be invited to meet their named goat. It says goat there. I'm confused. Is it one goat or 37 goats? You can submit a name suggestion to fingal.ie, and entries must be received by 5 p.m. May 17th. And all of that just as by way of an excuse.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, hood, lay, hood, lay. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, hood, lay, hood, loo. Folks in a town that was quite remote heard, lay, hood, lay, hood, lay. Lusty and clear from the goat herd's throat herd, lay, hood, lay, hood, loo.
The Von Trapps. So there it is. Fingal.ie if you have a good name for a kid goat or 37. There's 9 in our family. I think my mother ran out of names. 37 names. 37. Laura De Barra will be with us after 4 o'clock today. She is the gaff goddess and she does give good advice on all sorts of things around the house, whether it's getting rid of a smell or getting rid of a stain or sort of getting an old chair and freshening it up. And of course, it's the changing of the seasons now. So there are implications for your house or your home. I don't know what that is. It could be a wardrobe. How do you store your winter clothes? Although I wouldn't be getting rid of the coat quite yet. Or it could be something if you have a balcony or a garden, you want to do something there. Anyway, any questions for our gaff goddess, Laura De Barra? She gives great advice. Ray at RTE.ie, and we'll be speaking to Laura after 4 o'clock. Lisa Lam is over in Studio 8, and she'll be singing for us. Always great to have Lisa in. She's a FOT, a friend of the show. FOTS, F-O-T-S, friend of the show. Yeah, FOTS, she's a friend of the show. So Lisa Lam's coming up, and we've other things beside. And our Niamh, who's producing the show today, and did a great job on our show on Tuesday, live from Liverpool, is a big fan of Happy Valley. So she's over the moon and happy that the first 3 seasons, although she's seen them, the first 3 seasons of Happy Valley are available on the RTE player from next Tuesday, because we can't get the BBC. And if you didn't record the first one or you missed the first one, then you were out of it. So a lot of people want to see Happy Valley. The good news is that it's on the RTE player from next Tuesday. The fallout from our failure to qualify for the grand final of this year's Eurovision Song Contest continue. And there are funny people writing to the Irish Times today. And one of them is Brian Cullen from Rathfarnham in Dublin 16. He says, "Sir, another failure to progress beyond the semi-final stages of the Eurovision Song Contest. Having previously been extremely successful in this contest, we are now among the minnows. This is a national crisis," says Brian. "It needs serious corrective action." Maybe it's time for a tribunal investigating what has gone wrong in recent years, followed by a citizens' assembly and then rounded off with a referendum. This will take some time, but blank, blank, blank. Fill in the final words there. This will take some time, but blank, blank, blank. See how you do with that one. Brian Cullen's letter to the Irish Times today. And remember, it is to do with the Eurovision. I'm always reluctant to talk about anything that involves pronunciations and slagging off anybody else's pronunciations, because once you start, then the spotlight shines on you and we all get things wrong. And that's the nature of it. But this is sort of different. US game show, which has been going forever. It's been there since the beginning of time. Jeopardy is the name of it. They had a pronunciation problem on a recent episode. All three contestants lost out when they mispronounced the response to a $1,600 clue. And this is where they give you quotes and you have to say who said that. So the quote that was given: socialism of any type and shade leads to a total destruction of the human spirit. So that was the clue. Who said that? So the presenter is Mayim Bialik. You'll recognise her from Blossom and The Big Bang Theory. And the three contestants were Hannah, Sammy and Yuviria. And they all attempted to pronounce the Russian writer who said that or wrote that, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. So this is how it went. Jeopardy, been going on forever, $1,600. They had the clue. Anyway, have a listen.
An author and former prisoner. Socialism of any type and shade leads to a total destruction of the human spirit. Javeria.
Who is Solzhenitsyn?
No. Sammy.
Who is Solzhenitsyn?
No. Hannah.
Who is Solzhenitsyn?
No, this is a tricky one to pronounce. Looking for Solzhenitsyn.
That's what he said. He said that. Give him the $1,600 for her. Some viewers of the show weren't happy with the ruling, saying, if you're not going to accept anyone's attempt to pronounce Solzhenitsyn, don't write a clue about him. When I did Blackboard Jungle back in the day, I think the two question setters used to have a bit of crack at my expense. They'd put in the big words, and just see me squirm as I tried to pronounce them. And you'll say them easily enough when you're reading them in your dressing room or you're at home reading the paper and you're talking among your friends. But when you're there and there's an audience and there's a red light and there's a microphone, all that sort of thing, it gets a little bit more difficult. We spoke to Ian O'Brien yesterday, and as I said, he is and was inspirational in our chat yesterday. He has young onset Parkinson's, and he is in the next month climbing the highest points in 27 countries in Europe in 28 days. To raise awareness and to raise money for young onset Parkinson's. And James was on. He says, well, listen to your interview with Ian O'Brien yesterday about his Parkinson's diagnosis. I'm in my early 50s and was diagnosed with a similar type of and symptoms described by Ian, where I don't have the tremor either. My type is bradykinesia, which is a weakness on my left side. Fatigue is one of the biggest hurdles to jump. Luckily enough, I don't have depression yet, but I can get frustrated at times of not being able to do things quickly enough. Doing up button zips on shirts, etc., can be annoying, along with shoelaces, which I've remedied. Bit of Velcro, I suppose, and Ian was saying that. I also had to change my car to an automatic. Another difficulty I have, for instance, is the simple task of buttering bread, which becomes a chore. I think people take tasks, these tasks in particular, for granted, what they can do normally. I don't think too much about what is down the road for me. I live in the present and leave tomorrow, look after itself. And that's what Ian said yesterday. Good luck to Ian on his endeavour. I don't think I'll be doing something like that anytime soon. Regards, James. And thanks for that. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. We had a birthday request there. Where did I better? Because it's a queue up. Oh, yeah, there it is. There, I'll get to that. Scott Bryan, who we spoke to on Tuesday, he's a man who knows an awful lot about Eurovision. And he's tweeting away just to let you know what's going on over there in Liverpool. Today in Eurovision, Sophie Ellis-Bextor is doing a kitchen disco, literally from a kitchen in Liverpool's John Lewis. So that's very close to the arena there. And of course, tonight is the second semi-final. The people who know say it's weaker. And then the grand final is on Saturday. And as you know, we won't be there. Who's this? How are you? I hope you're sucking diesel, says this email. Please, can I play a birthday request for Emer Fallon in Strafford, who's 17 today, Thursday the 11th of May. Emer is a super trooper and anything by ABBA will be great. She cooks, bakes, plays piano and camogie, not at the same time, reads and will make a great wife. That's an odd thing to include in a birthday request for a 17-year-old. Thank you and cheerio, the Fallons, Mam Orla, Dad Paul and her tormented brothers James and Owen. Emer Fallon, happy 17th birthday. You are a...
Super trooper, beams are gonna blind me, but I won't feel blue.
There you go, ABBA, super trooper. For the week that's in it, I suppose, one of the most famous acts to come out of the Eurovision, Waterloo, was their song back in 1973. Did you know, a bit of Eurovision trivia that I've picked up this week, that they entered the Swedish National Song Contest prior to Waterloo with Ring Ring, which went on to be one of their best known songs as well, but didn't get through. They didn't get through with Ring Ring. And then they tried again with Waterloo, and the rest is popular music history. Now been lived out in a big warehouse in London. Ara, I knew you were always a big kid, KD. Thank you. And Pat Lacey is on the ball about that letter to the Irish Times. So the national crisis needs serious corrective action. This is the Eurovision. Time for tribunal, citizens' assembly, rounded off a referendum. This will take some time, but blank, blank, blank. Pat fills them in. What's another year? See? Bill and Noreen here, listen to you as we drive to our wedding in Tip. Our wedding is in Ashley Park House tomorrow. We can't wait. Oh, brilliant. Best wishes. And you know what? I was listening to the weather forecast this morning, as were you, Noreen, and I'm sure there are numerous Childs of Prague put out all over the place. But, the news is good. I heard the lady say 20 degrees for tomorrow. Isn't that brilliant? And if you're having a second day, the weather's going to be good on Saturday as well. So the best day of your lives. Have a brilliant time. That's Bill and Noreen heading to Ashley Park House for their wedding.
Sunday.
Yeah, rain on Sunday, but they'll be gone. Would it be better to have a two-part final over Friday and Saturday night involving all songs without leaving out countries in future? Two shows would cost less to stage than the current. Carl, that's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. I suppose spreading it out over the three events gives all the broadcasters more opportunity to ka-ching, ka-ching, cash in on it. We'll put that to our colleagues in the EBU and see what they have to say. We have to sort out our own backyard first, Carl. We have to sort out what we're doing wrong. Qualifying for the semi-finals twice in 10 years isn't good enough. It isn't good enough. Must try harder. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock to take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers, three Who Done It questions each. You know the deal by now. And there's a prize, a great prize actually. The people from the I Knew It collection of gorgeous four-star hotels are helping us out again. And the brilliant thing about this one is you have a choice as to where you go in the country. So there's the Dublin One Hotel in Dublin, Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, the Tullamore Court Hotel are celebrating their new spa. There's the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the INUA collection. INUA.ie. INUA.ie. Okay, on this Thursday afternoon, here's your qualifying question. The second semi-final of what big competition is taking place tonight? The second semi-final of which big competition is taking place tonight? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, we're heading towards the end of another school year. It's imminent for secondary schools, and for one school at least, it'll be the end of an era. Because next September, after 135 years, St. Joseph's in Fairview, known as Joey's, will no longer be a same-sex school and it's going to be enrolling girls for the first time. The principal is Sean Stack and he's on the line now. Good afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
Thanks for taking our call. How long have you been in Joey's?
I'm 12 years in the school. I started off as an English teacher and I took the role of principal maybe 3 years ago.
Right. It's a mid-sized school. I always thought Joey's was a big school. How many pupils have you got?
We currently have 260 enrolled. It's a small footprint right here.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. But been there for an awful long time. A Christian Brothers school originally?
Correct, yeah. Founded in 1888. Went over to the Erst Trust during the late 90s.
Yeah, all lay teachers now, I presume?
All lay teachers. We have no brothers left with us anymore, no.
Right. So how do you come about, how does it come about that you make a decision to go from single sex to comprehensive?
Yeah, I suppose when we were when we looked at it, this process would have started 2.5 years ago. And when I was talking earlier about it, it wasn't really a decision we made. We identified that there was a demand in the area and a need amongst the siblings of our current brothers, and based on what we were doing, and more importantly, the values and what we thought the school stood for. And when we kind of reflected on that, we said, actually, this is something maybe we're missing. And that was the starting point. It was only afterwards we saw there's an appetite for this and that this fits us. But it was more when we looked at what we were doing and had a real thought about that, we said, actually, it fits to have both genders in.
Because there was a lot of discussion about it late last year, wasn't there? And some politicians were calling for mad stuff, like to stop any funding, state funding for single-sex schools. That's how far it was going. Do you think the writing's on the wall for single-sex schools?
I think that's a question we've never considered. We really looked at ourselves and what we were about. I mean, I think there's a place for each school to look at. Well, what do we stand for? What do we offer? Is there a place for us to offer this in our communities? And look, maybe the answers would be different for different people. But like I said, when we had the sisters of our brothers going elsewhere and they wanted to stay together, I would say that's an issue, and it was something we could address.
And now this involves, as in from September 2023, it's a 6-year process, isn't it?
It is. Well, we start with the incoming first years.
Yes.
So rather than just opening for all years and that way, we started with the incoming first years, and then obviously they'll grow up. So next year will be another cohort.
Yes. Then.
So it is a 6-year changeover,
I'm just looking at the figures there. So there are 50 first-year students coming in September.
Correct.
18 of those are girls. So there's going to be 18 girls in a school population of 260. That's it, isn't it?
There's going to be 18 girls in a year of 50 is how I'd phrase it. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah. And look, there is a change, and we've done an extensive amount of planning, as I'm sure you can imagine, since we announced and made the decision. And those students, and not just the girls, the 50 incoming students will have every support and everything in place for them to achieve both on that sort of academic and growth level. And I suppose the line we always said is, we are not a boys' school taking in girls. We are becoming a co-educational school. And that starts with the first cohort and will take 6 years. Sorry.
Yeah, because language is important, isn't it? And you did some research. You went around to local primary schools and asked the girls what they wanted out of a secondary school.
Absolutely, yeah. And I thought, like I said, that was when a year ago we announced we were going co-ed. And I suppose the last year, 18 months or so, we've been doing a lot of consultation with those students and the parents and the schools about, well, what is a co-ed school for you? And that would have involved discussions around curriculum, extracurriculars. Uniform has obviously been a massive one. They have facilities in the building, and even what will be the direction of the school in terms of building and development and all those sorts of things. So it's been a whirlwind 18 months, and I think there's a few more years of it to come.
And was there any pushback at all from anybody?
Internally, it's been all very positive. The staff have been fantastic. They've come on board and really seen that this is what we stand for and that this is what we're enthusiastic about, and that spirit that we think is unique to our school. The parents and the students, again, it's kind of, it wasn't something that we had to push. It felt right for us, and it was really evident. So in pushback from inside, no. Has there been pushback from outside? You'll know yourself. You don't make your life that way.
No.
You listen to what comes from inside and what you stand for, and that's it.
I suppose the students, it's going to be the weirdest for are the 6-year boys, because they've been in that school for 6 years. Well, it'll be 5 now going into their 6th year, and now there's going to be 18 young girls on the campus as well.
You might think I'm being naive, but I'm not sure that it will be an issue. I think that they will be just students in the school that we look after. These are the sisters of their friends. These are the girls that are in their youth clubs. They're in the area with these people. This isn't, in the nicest way, it's not like the lads have never seen a girl before.
No, I know.
They will be coming in, and they're part of our community.
But in fairness, Sean, they haven't seen that number of girls in their school, and that's, I suppose that's the argument that people make
absolutely,
when they argue for co-ed schools, is that single-sex schools don't reflect the real world, you know.
And that's our job, to normalise that to make it feel like this is natural and this is what we are and this is what the world is. But you're right, yeah, of course.
Brilliant. Well, good luck with it. After 135 years of being a single-sex school, St. Joseph's Fairview becomes a co-ed school from this September. Sean, thanks for taking some time out.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean.
All the
bye
best.
Now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guests are set to take to the stage tonight in a play that hasn't been performed in Dublin since 1957, after it was shut down due to its explicit content. And now, its explicit content back in the day was a condom falling out of one of the characters' pocket. Now it's back, and this time with a modern twist. Joining me now to tell us more about it are actors Denise McCormack and Christine Collins. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello, Ray.
The play is Tennessee Williams' The Rose Tattoo, but it's a different version of it. So who wants to tell me about the change?
So The Rose Tattoo is, we're going to perform tonight in the Complex, and Vanessa Fielding, who's the artistic director, picked up this play a couple of years ago. I think it'd been on her mind, and she got in touch with the Tennessee Williams estate. It took a long time because they're notorious for not allowing any sort of adaptations to the original script. And she got onto them and asked them, could she transpose it from New Orleans, from an Italian perspective, to a halting site in Ireland? And strangely enough, they said yes. So that was the beginning, and that's where we are.
So it's significant then for loads of reasons, isn't it?
It is.
Because there are cant words in it, Christine.
There is indeed.
So it's sort of a traveller adaptation of a Tennessee Williams play. Would that be fair to say?
It would be, Ray. But I think the thing that is very important about the adaptation of it is that the show that was on in 1955 was about a marginalised Italians in New Orleans. And the fact that it's relevant to modern day travellers in Ireland right now in 2023 is what is so, to me, eye-opening about the whole situation. Like, it's 60 years, 70 years in the difference.
It's a poor reflection on Irish society.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're from the traveller community.
I am indeed.
Let's get your acting credentials out of the way, and then we'll talk about the traveller community. Okay. So you, as a baby, six-week-old baby, featured in Glenroe.
I was in Glenroe as a baby for on and off. You know the way children floated in and out of the set for about 12 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And your dad was, he played what part?
He played Johnny Connors in it. I played Blackie Connors' daughter in Glenroe. So they were like either cousins or brothers.
Right.
I'm not fully sure, to be fair.
So you weren't playing your father's daughter.
No.
Did that get confusing
at all? It didn't actually. It was actually quite normal, to be fair. But Liam was great, I will say that. He was very great. So.
Yeah. So acting as a traveller, you know, there wouldn't be many role models for you, would there? Well, I suppose your dad.
I have a father.
Your dad,
so
yes.
I suppose it was normal to me that he'd be an actor because there was nothing ever different about it.
Yes.
So to say that it was something that I thought I couldn't do, it wasn't. I did Glenroe and I did a couple of bits after it. And I was in like a couple of shorts and I was in King of the Travellers. I was in Trojanetti with Richard Harris. And I did a few bits on stage in the project, and I did a lead in the Druid McLally last September.
Right.
So Rosalie McDonough had written a show, and for the first time ever, it was a show that had all traveller actors in it. So yeah, I've done bits and pieces.
Rosalie's amazing.
Yeah, she's lovely.
She is.
Have you read her book, Denise?
I have.
Unsettled.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's an amazing book.
Yeah, it's a really
recommend it to anybody
book.
Who hasn't read it. It's not a big read, but
it's not. It packs a punch.
It does pack a punch. So this is particularly important for you, this Christine.
I think the thing I love about the show is two things. Denise does an absolutely amazing job at portraying a very delicate, fragile, strong woman, all in the sense of one body. And she takes on the role. Like, Denise hadn't even met many travellers before she started to do this. And, you know, there was no airiness about her. She was like, look, tell me how things go. What way does it work? She wanted to understand so she could do it justice. So I think like it, people that come to see it that aren't travellers will be intrigued at the insight they get. And I think the travellers that come to see it will probably have a wrench in their gut at how out there and how sexual and how it fights all the confinements that we're taught to restrain in our culture, if that makes sense.
So things that are oppressed within the traveller culture.
And especially within traveller women, I suppose. And, right. You know, the expectations of them being, you know, contained and like upright and proper at all stages, where they're not allowed to show weakness or fragileness. Right. And, you know, like Denise does a good job at showing that these things can happen.
Your character is a widow.
Yes.
Loses her husband who was involved in crime.
Crime, yeah.
And then she withdraws from the world and she sort of insists that her daughter does the same.
Yes, yes. So she looks at her daughter and she doesn't want... My character married a settled man. So she's a traveller, she married a settled man and he was involved in crime. He died. She didn't know that he was having an affair. So the play... is encapsulated with the idea that there are eyes watching and there are people all around and this woman is very marginalised. She's isolated within the community. Mm. So she, after losing her husband, she goes into a long period of mourning, 3 years. So the play takes place over a three-year period. Okay. And after the three-year period, her daughter has grown into a woman. And she is very, she's very mindful of the fact that she doesn't want her daughter to follow in her footsteps. Her daughter has met a settled boy and this brings up issues for her.
Did you feel a pressure playing the part of a traveller woman being a settled woman?
I did. I felt a huge pressure. And I remember speaking to Vanessa about it and Vanessa said, well, you know, what we can do is Vanessa was always going to translate this script with Catherine Joyce, who's an amazing traveller.
She works
activist.
Out in Blanchardstown. Yeah.
She is an amazing woman. And so I said, well, listen, I'd like to speak to Catherine about it. I want to know what she feels about it and if she feels that this is relevant to the community and if this is a positive thing. I don't want it to be a negative thing because it's the traveller community is a marginalised society as it is. And the last thing I wanted to do was do something that reflected negatively on that. So Catherine was amazing. I went out and I spoke to her. She brought me onto a Halton site. She absolutely endorsed the play. She loved it. She had sat down and she translated it. So I suppose that put my mind at rest. And the fact that we had this girl here, Christine, in the rehearsal room and another young traveller, James
Keeping
Collins.
Keeping you straight.
Listen, anything we wanted to know, she's a mine of information. And just stuff with the text that we had to, you know, make sure that it fit the context.
Okay.
Because you're fitting something that's not written. When you're trying to fit something into
adaptation.
A different...
Yes,
it's an adaptation.
Yes,
so, yeah. And, you know, it's... you have to be really careful that you're doing it justice. And Christine was great to have.
Christine, have you in your lifetime, have you seen loads of positive changes when it comes to the traveller community? Or are you still frustrated?
I would be a very frustrated traveller. But
would
that's
you?
Because my mother's a traveller activist. My father's been in the public eye forever. So I suppose you can see it from different angles, right? I think... Like, my problem with Irish society is that they think that it's okay to be racist against travellers because we're Irish.
Mm.
You know, oh, they're not from a different place, so we're not being racist.
It's a normalisation.
Do you know what I mean? It's so, and I think it's madness. If nothing, we're actually indigenous to this country. You should be more accepting of us than people that are coming from other places.
We had John Connors in recently. We had a long chat with him.
Yeah.
And I asked him, what did he think could be done? You know, like, how can we solve this?
It's not a...
Seems
not
like an eternal problem.
Yeah, but it's not an overnight solving problem.
No, I know, but it's been going on forever, you
I
know.
Look, I think education is a huge key in anything being solved in this country. I think travellers need to be able to say, like, I could be you, Ray Darcy, or I could be in the Shannon, or, like, we have somebody in the Shannon, do you know what I mean? Like, the problem with travellers is their education and their lack of it is not getting them to where they need to be education-wise, so then they're not able to further themselves to be better, I suppose. I think education is the key for anything to change for travellers in this country, if that's the question you're asking me.
Yeah. And the senator, the traveller senator...
Eileen Flynn.
And she was on the radio last week because she was... there was racism in place with the taxi driver, wouldn't drop her to the halting site when she was going home.
Yeah.
So it's alive and kicking.
Absolutely. Ray, look, it's very alive and kicking. Me and my father went to the premiere of a film that we were both in, walked out of the IFI, walked around the corner to a pub, and he said, not tonight. Hmm. And somebody was with us, and he's a very, in the music industry in Ireland, well-known man. And he said, do you know who he is? That's Michael Collins. He says, I know who he is, not tonight. Hmm. And we had to go to a different pub, because my father was like, I don't need this. Sure as hell won't be accepting it. Come on.
See, people listening would think that that's a thing of the past.
But it's not. It's an everyday thing for travellers. If it can happen to somebody as high profile as my father, what's happening to people that aren't high profile, right?
And do you think, and this is a question I asked John as well, do you think there's anything that the traveller community can do?
Well, I think little things like letting people know that every traveller is not the same. Do you know, get to know people, I suppose, like I would be as an individual, but very much so based how I take somebody on how they are with me. And I think, obviously, if everybody in this country was doing that, there would be no such thing as racism.
Yeah.
So that's all I would say. Treat a person how you would want to be treated. And if you're nice to somebody, they'll be nice back. But if you meet one bad person, don't make it be that version of every one of that bad person.
Yes, yeah.
Like if somebody from Castlelock went in to the post office and robbed it, that doesn't mean every person from Castlelock is going to rob a post office.
Fair point.
So why judge every traveller on the actions of the one bad traveller you may have heard about or know?
Are you hopeful?
A life, yes, you've always got to have a bit of hope, right?
Yeah.
There were a lot of people, as you say, Eileen Flynn, Rosalind McDonough, who was in the Abbey. Her play was performed in the Abbey, The First Traveller.
You mentioned John Connors.
John Connors is an amazing activist and a good friend of mine as well. So, you know, we have these people. So there's hope there because these people are shining a light on the problems that are still very real for people.
And this is another great step forward. So it's The Rose Tattoo. It's running from May the 11th, which is today.
Yes.
You had previews last night, to May the 20th, and it's in the Complex in Dublin 7.
Mm-hmm.
And Christine Collins and Denise McCormack star as Estelle and Sarah. So how did it go last night? Final question.
Yeah, it was pretty
good.
Yeah,
it was really good. I think we were all kind of buzzing afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big show. It's a very big show. It's a long show
as well.
You know? So we kind of pack a lot in for the two and a half hours.
And do you come to fisticuffs, the two of you?
No.
Not quite.
No, right, nearly.
I wouldn't like to come to fisticuffs with her now. On stage, no. We don't quite, but we have a bit of an argy-bargy. We have two, actually, don't we, on stage? Yeah. I don't know who wins, Christine.
Right. I don't think anybody wins.
No, I don't think.
Well, you have to go along and see it.
Absolutely.
Those are two in the Complex Dublin 7. Christine, lovely to meet you. I'm sure we'll talk again. Denise, great to see you again.
You too,
Good
Ray.
Luck. Okay,
thanks
quick
so
commercial
much.
Break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we've moved down to Studio 8. If I could have more of my headphones, it'd be great. We're in the company of Lisa Lam and band or friends?
Band and friends,
okay. So you have Claire Sherry. How are you, Claire?
How are you doing?
On mandolin. And we have Mike over here on guitar. And then we have Tim on fiddle.
How are you
all
doing?
Correct. And Lisa in the middle. Great to see you again, Lisa. The last time we spoke, you had sang the national anthem at the Aviva for the French-Irish game.
That's right, yes.
And we were all very impressed, as were people watching.
Thank you so much. There's more of them coming up in the summer and the autumn, so I'll wave to you from the pitch next time, Ray.
Great. now we're going to talk about your new project. This isn't a tour, it's a project. It's called Night Visiting, and it involves songs and poems and stories and folklore. So sing us a song first, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
is that okay? Great.
For sure.
What are you going to sing for us?
This is a beautiful old ballad called Blackwater Side.
Man, Tim. You're going like it was the ballad, and then you're going, go on, you will. You brought us with you then on the fiddle. Very cleverly done, well done. So Blackwater Side. So tell us a story about that, Lisa.
So Blackwater Side is a song that I learned from the wonderful Dolly McMahon, who is married to the wonderful and the late Kieran McMahon. And I spent a lot of time with Dolly over the COVID period. I was working on my MA in folklore. And I interviewed Dolly and we spent some time together. I was doing my field work and my research on all the old ballad songs. And Dolly has this beautiful repertoire and she grew up in East Galway. And so my introduction to the song was through Dolly, and that was really special.
How old is the song?
The song is older than time, probably. and the next one we're going to do in the show as well is even older. It's a Gaelic love song called Donal Og. Blackwater Side, it's a love song. And in the folklore repertoire, there's songs about love, loss, grief. But the greatest of all the themes is the human condition of love, and love in all the shades. So the good, the bad and the ugly.
And we've a great tradition of ballads, don't we, in this country? And before, like, Spotify and recording and all that, they were just passed from one person to the other around a fire in a group like this. You're in a semicircle there, and one person would sing it and the other person would pick it up, and that's the way it was done.
That's exactly it. And what's lovely about the idea with this project, it's called Night Visiting, and it's trying to invoke that old tradition of gathering around the hearth and telling the old stories and singing the old songs. And the source material that I've been kind of researching over the last couple of years has been sort of key to that. And it's looking at these old manuscripts from the National Folklore Collection and from online digitised formats. And what's beautiful is there's all these collections that are in these archives that need to be or should be brought to life. And the idea is to
find you're bringing them back to life, isn't that amazing, isn't it? So, some of these songs then won't have been sung for hundreds of years.
Absolutely,
or something,
and maybe pre-famine, or, you know, literally were passed from generation to generation on the roadsides. And it's just fantastic that there were collectors from 1936 with the National Folklore Collection that literally went out to all four corners of Ireland and dictated what they were hearing.
And so Night Visiting, and starts next Friday in Kenmare, in the Butter Market, and then the night after you're in St. John's in Listowel, then in the Riverbank Arts Centre in Kildare. Bruce Springsteen was there last week, just for information. Then Lime Tree in Limerick on 27th and 2nd of June. It's Wicklow Mermaid Arts, then Derry, the home place, Cork, Triskell Arts, Bear Island, lovely, West Cork, and Hinterland Festival in Meath. And you can find out more at lisalam.ie.
That's right. It. Thank you, Ray.
Now, it says there it's 25 past six. On Studio 8, where time stands still. So, did you hit upon any hits? You know, like we used to talk to John Spillane, he was always talking about the Hit Factory. So, were there any songs that you sort of, wow, that's an amazing piece of music or an amazing lyric? Or
yeah, I think what's beautiful about it is you had the likes of Seamus Ennis, who was a collector and a musician himself, so he was actually able to dictate musically, like what he was hearing in real time. So there's a lot of tunes that are preserved and are as old as time, which Tim and Claire would know a lot about. And but song wise, there's so many beautiful songs. A lot of them in the Irish language, and I think Donal Logue. When I was, you know, speaking with Dolly and researching these pieces, what she would always say to me was, these are pieces that should be sung at night time. They have a mood about them, and it's when the party has died down and people gather back around the fireplace. These are the songs, and that you know, they need time, and they need an energy and an atmosphere.
Okay, I'll dim the lights and I'll move the clock on to 10:30 there for you.
Fast forward the clock. Exactly.
Night Visiting 2023, and when you go to each place, Kerry, Limerick, Wicklow, Derry, Cork, Kildare's in there as well. You sing songs that are special to that particular area.
That's right, and the folklore from the area. So next weekend we're starting in Kerry, and I'm going to read some stories from really old collections that are about matchmaking and the matchmakers, and that period of time in Shrovetide, which is between Christmas and Easter, was the matchmaker's kind of peak time for finding a match. And he'd go to the village, and the stories are absolutely, they're so funny, fantastic. There was one from West Cork where the matchmaker goes to Kilcrohan, and he tells Con Mahoney this local story, and he says, Con, the lady you want to be matched with is over there. And he goes up the stairs to meet her, and when she sees him, she refuses to marry him. She says, he's a poet and all poets die young. So that's not a match.
Bit of a generalisation.
Probably, yeah.
So it's Donal Logue, and there's a bit of poetry, is there, to start us off, or are you just going straight into the song?
I'll read you a little extract of The Matchmaker, if that's all right.
Right, okay. Okay, and so, then, yeah, go for it.
In olden times, there used to be a fair at Inchin na Ciotach, halfway between Bantry and Drimaleague. It used to be a great fair, and in the evening the poets would gather together, but the best of them all was Con Mahoney. In many a good old day we spent together, but the best day I ever had with Con was the day he carried me into Kilcrohan matchmaking. We went to the public house and we had a good few jokes. And I told Con that the girl he wanted to meet was coming down the stairs. So Con made for the stairs, and the girl, seeing him coming towards her, shoved herself against the wall, thinking that Con would pass up. But instead, Con put his hands around her and composed the following rhyme. Upstairs, downstairs, anywhere at all, to meet a pretty girl with her back against the wall. When the girl found out that Con was a poet, she wouldn't marry him because she said all poets die young. So this is the great Don Lug, and it's a song about all the lovers of Shrovetide. So it's for all of those lovers who came together to meet and fall in love many, many moons ago. And when thank you, Ray, so much for having
us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, lads. Thank you, Ray. Thank you so much. Claire, Tim, Mike, thanks very much. And Lisa Lam. LisaLam.ie for the upcoming night visiting dates. Anish Tosh and the Prief Skelton and Oak to La Cotta Wallish.
Gurmaga Cot. We've sprinted down. When I say we, I've sprinted down from Studio 8 and we're back in Studio 7 and there are two quizzers standing by. A few of the texts we didn't get to from the last hour. On the goats, how about naming each goat the word for goat in each European language? In Finnish, it's pukki, pronounced pukki, thank you. In Catalan, it's cabra, says Gary and Lucan, and so on and so on. Not a bad idea. You'd run out of them because there's 37 and there's only 27 or about there, so you'd run out of names. What about a three wild card thingy where the acts that don't get through on public vote are then in with a chance from a European jury? Plus, it would be more exciting and get countries involved. That's a fix for the Eurovision from Maeve in Cork. Thanks, Maeve. 51551ray@rte.ie. The Who Done It quiz. Yeah, as I said, two quizzers standing by and there is a prize. And this week it is a two-night stay for two people in one of the gorgeous four-star Ainua collection hotels. There's the Dublin One Hotel, the Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, the Tullamore Court Hotel in Tullamore, obviously, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways in Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy in a Ainua hotel. Ainua.ie. 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 Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hi, Ray. Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. Cadogan.
Yeah, well, Cadogan, we call it here.
Cadogan.
Yes, Cadogan. Yes.
It sounds like that thing that some people have at Christmas where you put the goose inside the duck and the duck inside the turkey.
Well, you had Mrs. Kate Cadogan years ago on the Irish RN, if you remember.
Oh, yes.
Was it Hannah? Anna, what was her name?
Anna
Menahan.
Yeah, where does the name come from?
Oh, I don't know. I'm afraid I'm hopeless for tracing these things.
I think Anna Menahan was in that production of The Rose Tattoo from the 1950s, if my memory serves me correctly, as in what I read today, the controversial one. So there you go, there's a coincidence. You're in Skibbereen and you're watching the Eurovision tonight.
Yes, I will be. Yeah, well, I will be. I might tape it tonight, actually, because I'm out for a while, but I will be watching it.
Yes, and you were there to witness the first performance of Riverdance.
I was, yes.
Wow.
Yes, that was something else. We won it, and we saw Riverdance as well.
Yeah. And did you know that night, Kevin, that you were witnessing something special?
Yeah, well, you saw Jean Butler coming on stage doing her little dance, and you were saying, "Oh Christ, here we go now, little jig or whatever." And next thing, Michael Fleckley comes on and starts thumping, and then the drums start going, and then the rest of the dancers come on, and all of a sudden you're witnessing this row of people in perfect order, every step perfectly,
yes,
and all of a sudden you automatically stood up at the end of it.
Yes,
and it was a no-brainer.
It was immediate and spontaneous, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally,
it just had to be done.
It was something else. And sure, there hasn't been anything like it since.
No, and various countries have tried to match it but failed.
They won't match that. They might match the winds in the singing, but I don't think that they'll ever match the interval act.
I suppose you're clutching at straws when you're saying we had the best interval act of all time. We may not be winning it now, but we had the best interval act of all time.
Yeah, we'll take that.
We'll take that, yeah. How much did you pay for the tickets back in the day, 1994?
Yeah, well, no, bear in mind, I wasn't married. I didn't have a mortgage.
Right.
I had no children. And I had never gone on a holiday at that stage either.
Right, okay.
And we paid £350.
Wow.
Yeah, bonkers. I don't forget a minute of it.
Yeah. I wonder what that is now in what's the equivalent now?
As I said, I didn't have any expense whatsoever at the time, and I'd never gone on a holiday in my life, so I justified it that day.
Yes, okay, fair enough. And you did witness the first performance of Riverdance, so there you go.
Absolutely. There was a party afterwards. We met Jerry Ryan, we met Niamh Kavanagh, we met Michael Fleckley, we met them all after.
Ah, right, well then, sure, look, yeah, that's what memories are made of. Priceless memories. Okay, you're up against Tom Foy from Kildare. How are you doing, Tom?
Hi, yeah, how are things?
Are you Kildare Town? No.
No, I'm outside Naas.
There were Foy's.
Pluckerstown.
Pluckerstown, yeah, near Kilmeag.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were Foy's in Kildare Town. Is Foy a Kildare name, Tom?
No, I'm a Dub.
You're a Dub?
I'm a blow-in down here.
Right, okay. What do you do for a living?
Taxi driver.
So do you work in town then, in the city?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how long does it take you to get into work?
About 40 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad, yeah. And do you work days,
no,
days or nights?
Work kind of afternoon into the night. You know, it's the kind of
yes,
late evening.
Right. Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Big day coming up in the family?
Oh, we have, yeah. Yeah. Big and expensive. Daughter's getting married.
Yeah, I thought that tradition was gone out the window there, where the father of the bride paid for the wedding.
Well, we won't say anything about that one.
Right,
know?
Okay, right.
I might be throwing a few pounds for it.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, fair enough. So it's Danielle, yeah. Your daughter, is marrying Mark in 4 weeks' time in Killishy House, just outside Naas.
It is, yeah.
Which is a lovely venue. Will you be watching the Eurovision tonight?
Yeah, I'll watch it tonight. I missed it on Tuesday because I was up ferrying people in and out of Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yes, of course, that was on Tuesday night. Yeah. And then Saturday night, some people in the office are saying they're not going to watch tonight because then they'll have something new to watch on Saturday night, you know, having watched the Irish semi-final. But anyway, it's...
Well, I'll be working Saturday night, so I've got to miss the final.
It's pure diversion, pure entertainment. Right, now it's Kevin versus Tom. Three questions each. I'll tell you the category, then I will ask if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and you get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. So, Kevin, we start with music. Do you want a clue or not?
We'll take a chance. We'll say no.
No, okay. So, for two, who is this?
I don't know the song, but I don't know the act.
The hint was this English rock band named themselves after a body part. Elbow. Elbow was the answer. Okay.
Oh, God. Wouldn't have known.
Great song, yeah. Okay, Tom, what are you going to do? Are you going to go for a clue or not?
Oh, I'm going to try a clue, yeah.
You're going to try a clue. Okay, right. So listen carefully.
Yeah.
The first part of this band's name could also follow the words cow, door, and blue. As in cow something, door something, blue something. So for 1 point, who is this? Who's that?
I haven't a clue.
Cowbell, doorbell, bluebell, Bell X1.
Oh, okay.
Bell X1, Irish band Bell X1. So no points there. Okay, even start then. We're on to the second question, which is TV characters. Again, Kevin, 1 point with a clue, 2 points with no clue. What do you want to do?
Okay, I'll chance it again. I'll chance no clue.
Okay, for two... I want the name of the TV character, not the actor. The TV character. Here we go.
I've been at Dunder Mifflin for 12 years, the last four as regional manager. When I come through here... see, we have the entire floor. So this is my kingdom, far as the eye can see. Ah, this is our receptionist, Pam.
Who's that?
I know it's from The Office.
Yeah.
And it's... what's the name, Carol or whatever?
Yeah, Steve Carell. You don't know the character's name. Yeah, you know everything else by the character's name. Michael Scott is what we're looking for there. Okay, Tom, TV characters.
Okay, I didn't know that one, but we'll go with no clue. What?
You're going to go with no clue. Okay, TV characters, no clue. For 2 points, who is this?
You must be joking. What are you shaking your head at me like that for? You've been here for 3 hours. I'll give you 100. Get in there and sing happy birthday. Get in there and blow up some more balloons and you'll get your money.
Who's that?
Don't know.
No. Give us a, no guessing, no. That is Nidge from Love Hate.
Tom
Vaughan Lawler, yeah. Nidge is sort of one of the best baddies on Irish TV ever, along with Bren from Kin, but no points. Okay, so it's even, it's really even here. Nobody's scored any points yet. It's down to the wire.
We're doing great.
Now, the final category, English politicians. English politicians. So, Kevin.
I'll chance it again. No clue.
Okay. So, for 2 points, which English politician is this?
Good afternoon. I have just accepted Her Majesty the Queen's kind invitation to form a new government. I'm honoured to take on this responsibility at a vital time for our country.
Who's that?
Liz Truss.
It is Liz Truss. 2 points on the board. There you go. It's like a goal in the 90th minute there for Kevin. There's still 5 minutes, Tom. Extra time. So it's English politicians. You have to go without a clue, don't you?
Yeah, I do indeed.
You do. Okay, so for 2 points and to bring us to a tie-break situation, which English politician is this?
It's been just 3 weeks since we lost Her Majesty the Queen. As we face new challenges without her, we would do well to keep her in our thoughts.
And it is.
Oh, I can't think of her name. She was the shortest Prime Minister ever, wasn't she?
No, that was Liz Truss. She was in the running to be the leader of the Conservative Party, and she featured heavily in the coronations on Saturday morning. She was the lady with the sword and the intergalactic outfit. Penny Mordaunt is the name we were looking for there,
okay,
Tom.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
They were sort of different today, and they were tough. Tom, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup for your taxi. Good luck with the wedding, and send on our best wishes to Danielle and Mark.
I will indeed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. Mind yourself. Thanks. Bye. Kevin, well done.
That's great. Fantastic.
Yeah,
lovely.
Yeah, you can now go to inua.ie, and choose from their many 4-star hotels all over the country and decide which one you're going to go to.
That's so
congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
See you.
Take care.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gaff Goddess Laura de Barra is in London and in a studio and about to talk to us. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Were you a fan of The Sound of Music?
I actually did quite like it.
Yeah. You can join in if you like.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd lay,
That you can't but smile when you hear that. You can't but
exactly.
smile. Listen, great to talk to you again. The seasons, they are changing. We're going from spring to summer. How does that affect what you do and what people should be doing?
Well, I think we're moving into using different things, right, in the season coming up. So a lot of people are making more space for the things they're going to use more, putting away their winter wardrobe, maybe getting a lighter duvet, and how you move things around can affect how they come back to you. So a lot of advice, pretty much. So like one thing I see a lot now on social media and TikTok and stuff is vacuum packing.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks it's a one size fits all kind of affair, that you can just vacuum pack the lot of it, throw it up to the top of your wardrobe and be done. But I'm here to tell you, you have to be careful. So when vacuum packing fibres that are man-made is a little bit more straightforward than natural fibres. So for example, plant-based fibres like cottons, linens and things like that, and then animal-derived fibres can get damaged by vacuum packing because they need air to stay stunning. So when you take the air out of them, they can misshapen, lose their kind of luster and integrity. And it's proven that it takes clothing the same amount of time that they were vacuum packed for to come back to normal. So if you vacuum pack and put away for 3 months, you've got to wait 3 months till they come back to the same kind of... Yeah, I'm telling you, it is a myth that you can just throw it all into vacuum pack and throw it up into the back of your wardrobe.
Okay.
You're taking the air... Like, how fibres, the spinning process in fibres, to be quite, like, short with it, there's air in there, and that's what makes the the fibres that are spun into the yarn that's then woven into the fabric.
Uh-huh.
And when you suck out that fabric, that's vital. Like, do you know you sweat more in a polyester top and some clothes smell more and hold on to bacteria? That's because there's no air within the fibres. It's plastic fibres. It's made from waste of like petroleum byproduct and all that kind of stuff. So they will be able to maintain their integrity. So don't put away things like winter coats that have filling in them. Wool is not one to put away. Instead, just fold them and pop them into a cotton bag instead.
That'll be news to a lot of people. That'll be news.
Listen, here to break hearts, I'm afraid. And then, so
and the duvet, we're still on a big enough duvet at home now. But I did have to throw it off the other night. Not too much information, I know.
I love it.
Does everybody have a winter and a summer duvet, or is that a luxury, or what?
I think, like, I personally, we have two purely because when we both moved in together, he's a hot sleeper, and then I would literally sleep with 74 duvets on top of me if I could, because I'd hate the risk of ever being cold for half a second.
Right.
So we just happen to have a light and a heavier one. You don't have to change it up. It's actually more essential that you change the kind of fibres that are in your sheet and your duvet cover. You should be sleeping in more cotton, and the type of weave as well, like a sateen weave, if you think about it, is a tighter weave and it makes you sweat more. If you get like very hot at night, or you get hot flushes at night, you're better off just using something like a percale weave in the bedding, or like a straight weave, and using cotton.
What weave? A percale?
Percale. They say like percale, most people say, but then if you're fancy, you can say percale. And it's basically, you know, like a work shirt?
Yes.
The way you can breathe more through that. That's the type of weave it is. You're much better just being able to have air flow when you're in
fabric.
Bed.
A breathable fabric. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Because a duvet is expensive, and if you're like, oh, this is only for a couple of months, like 8 weeks under something lighter, and then you've got to store it, just get bedding that's more appropriate for the summer.
And you can get those half and half ones, can't you? Just, I'm just advice for you, me giving you advice. Listen,
I love it.
Because if he's, you know, if he's hot and you're not so hot, I mean, when it comes to sleeping in the bed, that maybe you need a half and half duvet, do you?
There you go. And listen, one of my bosses swears a key to a happy marriage is having two duvets.
Yes, there you go.
So you can just separate completely.
Listen, we said you were coming on. As always, we were inundated with questions for you. So let's get to them then. Will you please ask the goddess, that's you, for some advice on curtains that were washed? Oh, this doesn't sound good. The material shrank, but the lining didn't.
Oh.
If I rip them and re-sew, should I starch the sides? Regards.
So what's happened here is the fibres in the lining and the fibres in the curtain are different. I would assume that the lining is going to be a man-made fibre, so it doesn't shrink with heat, and then the curtains were probably a plant-based fibre, like a linen or a cotton. What you can do, like what they would have done back in the day when this happens, is re-wet the curtains and then hang them upside down, like if you hang them from the hem, not the tape at the top, and leave them for a few dry wet, and kind of pull them as they're drying, like every kind of like half hour, go over and give them a good tug. And that could actually stretch them out.
Would that work? Yeah.
It can work depending on whether there's a mix, if there's a blend in there and the type of integrity of the fibre, but it's worth trying. Like it'll only take an overnight, an hour, a day or whatever, rather than ripping everything off. Starching curtains is just usually for them to keep shape, but also starching, as long as you don't use like a stiffener, stiffeners are usually synthetic, starches are natural, and they'll help stiffen the fabric to keep the shape, but they'll also prevent dust and dirt getting onto the curtains. It's kind of like an older thing to do to curtains, but I quite like it.
Okay. It reminds me when you, remember you got your thing and had the zip, and then you washed it and the zip and the material shrunk at different rates and you had the, it looked ridiculous.
You keep the temperatures down, that's how you avoid all
there you
that.
Go. Yeah, I'll
temperatures.
I'll ring my mother later and tell her that what she should have done back in the day. Does Laura have tips for doing up a regular weekly cleaning schedule and then a monthly, quarterly one for bigger jobs or ones that don't need to be done as frequently? And the order to clean things rooms in, need a simple checklist to get on top of it all in a busy house of five. Thanks, Claire and Wicklow. I think you've probably done this in a book already, have you?
Yeah, if you buy Gaff Goddess, yes, it'll all be in there. However, if you've got a house of five, you probably don't have time to read like a book too much and kick back. So I'll tell you in a couple of seconds. So what you mainly want to do every week is you want to be starting with anything sanitary. So kitchen, bathroom, bed linen, and then just hoovering most of the areas that will have things dropped like food and in front of the front door. You don't have to be like a domestic goddess scrubbing your house all the time. It probably actually is worse for people because they won't have as good immune systems. So don't ever put pressure on yourself to have a house perfect. I think quarterly things you want to take care of are areas with water and filters. So extractor fans, the back of the fridge, the dishwasher, the washing machine, cleaning those things out, anything that water passes through, cleaning out drains, things like that. Mm. Then your kind of like bigger jobs will just be seasonal with rotating things. But I think if you just think of things that attract pests like mice and bacteria, just do those weekly to keep on top of it.
Okay, good advice. I have an antique inlaid chest of drawers, which is lovely, but has a damaged leg. Oh, it's completely broken off and I need someone to fix it. Any ideas, please? Angela Blackrock, County Dublin. Would you do something like that yourself now?
I probably would, to be honest, because right, I'd be able to establish, like, if this was joinery, like, for, which it probably would be if it's antique, like, if it's just come off, usually you'll be able to get it back on quite easily if it's just slotting back in. What I would do if you want to do it yourself is take the leg to a DIY store and they'll know what it's made of, take a picture of where it's come out of, and they'll tell you what to do to either glue it or screw it back in.
Right. Okay. And you get that sort of advice, do you? In even in the big ones like Woody's and that, would you get advice
like
that?
Yeah, like they'll say to you even like, oh, that just looks like if it's antique, it's not as straightforward if you want to resell it. But like they'll be able to look at it and say, okay, that's come away because this has happened. This is where you go. I learned a lot at the very beginning from going into DIY stores and speaking to somebody who just knows what they're talking about with it.
Okay. Oh, negative press for vinegar. Stop press. Stop the press. I tried the soda bicarbonate and vinegar to clean my dishwasher today, but after the hot cycle, the bicarbonate was still in the cup.
That's not negative about vinegar. She can rest easy.
Right,
my blood pressure. So what you need to do when you put the vinegar in the top is tilt the cup so that water is able to fly into it from the spray arms. If you have a tilted cup, and it has to be a low-rise cup, like a little bowl. Yeah. If it's a mug, water's never going to get into her. If it's still not getting into it, you have a clogged spray arm. So take the spray arm off and look around it at all the holes. If it's clogged, get a cocktail stick and you'll be able to get the piece out.
There you go. Sorry, I shouldn't. It was bicarbonate, the soda bicarbonate, not the vinegar.
It probably was the cop, actually.
Your precious vinegar, your precious vinegar. Your hero. Vinegar, my hero.
My queen. Yeah.
Laura the Barra, thank you so much for all that great advice. We'll talk to you soon. Mind yourself. See you. Bye.
Thanks, bye.
That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.